Welcome to the show. I'm Doug Gottlieb, but I'll tell you why I'm not buying what the Steelers are selling about Big Ben and why John Gruden is butchering his return to the Raiders. Speak for yourself starts now. All right, hello and welcome. Cowherd and Whitlock thankfully are off. Cowherd tweeting from somewhere in Canada.
Yes.
Canada. Okay. But I'm joined by a couple of longtime NFL players, yes. Greg Jennings.
Obvious.
Tyler Law. And the IG master himself, Jason McIntyre. Let's start with Cam Newton, shall we? Whose feud with Kelvin Benjamin may not be over just yet. Remember, Cam confronted his old teammate before their preseason matchup last week after the receiver had called out Cam's accuracy. And now the Panthers tweeted a video of Cam delivering a cryptic message in typical Cam Newton style.
I need things around me just like this wall.
I know you probably ask yourself, like, why this wall is just so basic? But it never changed on me. It's the same wall every single day. I like that. And I need things, people around me that's like this wall.
This to me, guys, feels like, hey, we used to be boys, and this is how you treat me. Remember, when Kelvin Benjamin was traded midseason last year, it was, I believe, Cam Newton who went to bat for his wide receiver. I don't even think that Cam Newton is disputing what Kelvin Benjamin is saying, because it's indisputable. He is inaccurate. But when one of your friends says that after your relationship professionally is over, I feel like it's a personal shot. And I actually don't mind Cam doing it this way. And it's because this is who Cam is. This is on brand for Cam Newton. It's not on brand for anybody else. Right? He's the quarterback who dances after he gets a first down, gets a touchdown. Nobody else does. Right? He wants to be, what was it, a mogul and an entertainer. He's never said he wants to be the best quarterback ever. And I think this is more of a friendship thing, and he's really bothered by it personally. I don't think this has anything to do with professional.
Doug, I'm okay with him approaching Kelvin Benjamin on the field. Right? I was fine with that. Much respect to Cam for that. But now making a video, talking to a wall, I mean, you're Cam Newton. You were an MVP of the league. Who's Kelvin Benjamin? He's never been a Pro Bowler. What are you wasting your time with Kelvin Benjamin for? He's more likely to eat himself out of the league than make a Pro Bowl. Kelvin Benjamin is irrelevant. Cam Newton is a superstar in this league, and I think it's ironic he brings up a wall, right? He talks about never changing. Cam Newton has to change. He's 29 years old. He's been a 58% completion guy his entire career. Maybe his MVP year was an outlier. Maybe that was just the one year where he blossomed and then he returned to being a 58% completion guy. I don't know. Ty, I think Cam's got to change.
I think it is awesome that we're talking about this, because what did he say in that video that talking to a wall was about Kelvin Benjamin? We're all speculating, so he's doing exactly what he wants us to do and read between the lines. But Cam Newton did not, I didn't see anything on there that had any relevance to Kelvin Benjamin.
So what do you think he's talking about?
You didn't read into it at all?
I mean, he didn't say anything about it. He could be talking about anything. But I'm saying because of the past that happened, he approached him there. He did not say anything specifically. Did he tweet it? Did he say at Kelvin Benjamin? Did he say any of that? It's all speculation right now. I'm thinking that it's awesome that he's doing that, because it has us right now sitting here talking about it and making the story for him.
Which is what he wants. Exactly. It's almost like a viral subtweet. That's what it feels like.
Exactly. It's a subliminal message. It's okay. You take it for what it is. We all know pretty much what it is and what it's about. It
How
is about that.
It?
And it, because he left it for me to take it for what I thought it was. He didn't say specifically, so it's for me to interpret it my own way. And for me, I don't have a problem with it. I really don't. We all want Cam Newton to be this prototypical quarterback who doesn't say anything, who wears his collar the right way, who practices and who approaches the game the same way as Peyton Manning and Tom. That's not who he is. To your point, be who you are. And this is who Cam Newton is. I don't think he did anything that was too far. It is, I guarantee you, everyone up here, if someone says something directly about you, whether it's truth or not, there will be some type of response. It is hard to not respond when somebody says something and then you go to address them without any ears, without anything that can hear and take it for what it possibly is not, and respond to it. That's what Cam did. He rejected that. So then this is my response now.
Let me ask Ty. What do you think this is about if you don't think this is about Kelvin Benjamin?
I'm I'm saying it could be, but I'm saying it could be. But I'm just saying he did not say nothing specifically. He played it cool like Cam is, cool as a fan.
I agree, he but we cool. would all agree
and
what
and
this
you guys
is about.
Are putting words in his mouth, speculating about what he's talking about.
Okay.
That was awesome, Cam. He got y'all talking about
okay,
it.
So wait,
he's not
going
to catch me up in there to sit there and make an opinion on that one because to me, in my opinion,
yes.
No disrespect to the producers, but that wasn't showing me nothing right there.
Really?
It wasn't showing me nothing, really. He didn't do anything that exciting.
How many other quarterbacks to put a video out talking about a wall and trying to be funny, like, you just
trying to be funny. Was that funny?
I didn't think it was.
Absolutely not.
No, he was, but he was doing the cam.
Not.
He was doing the cam thing where he smiled to show it doesn't bother me. But by talking about it, showed it does bother him. Look, anytime somebody takes a personal shot at you, it's a personal and a professional shot.
You're swinging down, Doug. It's Kelvin Benjamin. This isn't Greg Olsen, a great tight end. This isn't an elite player in the league.
It wasn't even worth Cam saying his name.
That's my point.
To Doug's point, he's saying this is not really him addressing or saying what he said is not true. It's a relationship. We had a relationship far beyond the gridiron. This was a personal shot now. So for me, it's a friendship that has been now attacked, and you did it for what reason?
Remember, Steve Smith, when he left, and like, look, if he really wanted to go at them professionally, he could have brought up a photo of when they went to the Super Bowl and pointed out that Steve Smith was traded away, or Steve Smith was in Baltimore and Kelvin Benjamin was hurt, right? That would have been, we won, and I was the MVP, and you weren't even here. But instead, he did it this way. And the reason he didn't go after Steve Smith when Steve Smith left was because they didn't have a good personal relationship. He and Kelvin Benjamin were boys. They were boys, and now you're talking about me. However accurate or inaccurate, not just my passes, but the comments were, it hurts me because I thought we were friends, and now this is how you talk about me? And then we don't even have a conversation about it in Buffalo. You don't even want to look me in the eye and address me. That's just wrong, and that's how I take it. And Ty, I think that's how you take it as well. I think because he doesn't say his name, and because he does
it's not even worth Cam's time to say his name, but he did it, and we're reading between the lines. I mean, that's our job, to read between the lines, but he did not say Kelvin Benjamin's name. It's not worth it to Cam. He's too big for that. And I think he's man enough. If he really, really, really has something to say, I think Cam Newton will come out and say it on social media because that's who he is.
I think this is the evolution and him trying to be smarter. I don't know if it works. I didn't
work. It's working because we're talking about.
Yeah, you're right. That's it. To Green Bay, where Aaron Rodgers has been, as usual, chipper self so far in training camp. He's already gone after his young wide receivers, calling their practice last week, quote, piss poor. And when asked if the young guys got the message, Rodgers sent a new message to anyone who was bothered by his comments.
I hope we're not that soft. I hope we can, you know, hear comments or read comments and not get offended by things. It's a professional environment. It's not a personal environment. The things I'm saying, I don't have some vendetta against any player. I care about winning, number one. And I'm going to say and do the things that I feel like can advance us. It's going to be tough at some points. It's not a popularity contest all the time. You know, obviously, you know, as a human, you like being liked and appreciated. But I'm trying to win games because that's my job.
I think there's a certain kind of Kobe sort of feel right now to Aaron Rodgers, where he wants to be respected, doesn't care about being liked. But I also think the reason, guys, he readdressed it is because of how we took it. And by we, I'm going to say the media. And I know this is kind of weird for both you guys being so close to being former players, but you now are members of the media. But many of the people we work with didn't play professional sports, didn't play collegiate sports at a high level, and aren't used to the fact that somebody's going to call you out when you stink, right? Like, we've all been in a film session where you get called out in front of the rest of the team and you get embarrassed, you get humiliated. That's very, very normal inside a locker room and inside a film room. But it's not normal in a regular workplace, and I think his response to it is not necessarily a response to other players or to the wide receivers themselves. It's the response to his comments, and that it was met with great negativity. Oh, here he is, bitter Aaron Rodgers again. I just think he's stating facts. Hey, I don't care about you liking me. I'm not here to put your arms around me. I am tired of coming up short. I am tired of being the best quarterback in the NFL and not getting a chance to play in the Super Bowl. I haven't got a chance to match up with Tom Brady in the Super Bowl yet, and I want to get there, and the only way to get there is to demand perfection, much like we've seen of Tom Brady in New England.
When I initially heard this, and I have to be honest, I thought to myself, wow, how ironic is this? Aaron Rodgers calling other players soft for something that's being said about them, whether it's in the media or another teammate, because that was and is kind of his perception of being kind of soft when it comes to that sensitive. I shouldn't say soft, sensitive. But then the more I looked at it, I'm like, when I came into this league, Brett Favre was my quarterback. And as a young receiver, I did any and everything I could to make sure I made him happy, to make sure I did not upset or interfere with our growth as a veteran quarterback and a rookie receiver. What I also see in Aaron Rodgers is a guy who understands my window of opportunity is starting to close. I've been playing at a high level my entire career, and I've been having pieces taken away from me my entire career and not added like all these other quarterbacks. And I'm supposed to take this? I'm supposed to be okay with this? No, I need you to step up and to play and perform in practice, on the field, during the games, like you're supposed to. This is the NFL. This is who you're supposed to be. Let it happen.
Okay, wait. So is Aaron Rodgers super sensitive?
At one point he was. I don't know how he is now. It seems and it appears that he's kind of shifted, but he always has that subliminal message punch that he throws to the media as well, to where you say something about him or you attack him, he's going to take his shot.
I mean, but we're having a conversation about something. Would we have the same conversation if he was like that towards Jordy Nelson, somebody that's already established? I think that it's okay to demand you step up and be a better player. Do we jump on Michael Jordan for demanding the best out of Scottie Pippen or whoever else he was playing with because he makes them better? Do we get mad at Tom Brady for jumping down his receiver's throat but running the right route? So he's doing what he's supposed to do as a leader of the team. You know, hey, I'm giving it all I got. I expect perfection out of you. Guess what? If you don't run the right route, I ain't throwing you the ball. But if I throw you the ball and it's right there, you better catch it. You know what I mean? So he has a right to expect perfection. He has that right as the quarterback. Because like I said, his window is closing.
Yeah,
so get on my level or get off the field.
Yeah, I think window closing may be strong. He's 34. Listen, quarterbacks are playing later now, 40, 41. I'm totally fine with this. Whether it's a football field, basketball field, you work in a factory, you work at a restaurant, if you're not doing a good job, you can get called out. That's what good bosses do. Bill Belichick has done this for, 20 years in New England? He has undressed Tom Brady in those film sessions talking about, I'll go get a quarterback from the local high school to make that out pass. So if Bill Belichick can criticize players, why can't Aaron Rodgers? I have no problem whatsoever with anybody calling out somebody who's not getting the job.
I do think, though, that both you guys, you remember my cousin Vinny, right? When she's like, my biological clock, like his football clock is ticking.
Okay? Yes, absolutely.
He's not playing till he's 40. And if you know anything about Aaron Rodgers, he's a guy who's, what's the movie, the guy played for the Saints who has ALS? Steve Gleason, that Gleason movie really, really affected him. Like he's very much about safety, and I don't see him playing into his mid-40s. And he's a guy who also, he uses his great athleticism to move the chains, to manipulate the pocket as well. And at some point, when you get in your late 30s, that's when you stop being able to move. He's like any of these guys that are at the top of their craft. He watches Tom Brady play in the Super Bowl every year and thinks, that should be me. When Brady beat the Seattle Seahawks, remember, they had the lead. He was playing with a pulled calf. And, you know, they fumble an onside kick, a couple miracle plays, and Russell Wilson, who he cannot stand, ends up going to what he thought was his Super Bowl. So there's a competitive thing in there. There's the window of opportunity, you know, his football clock is ticking. And then I think you mentioned Jordy Nelson. He's still ticked about Jordy Nelson.
Without question.
And when it's the young guy, when he says the young guys, the new guys, what I think, you tell me because you played with him, the translation is, hey, if we had Jordy Nelson, none of this piss poor effort would ever happen.
It's more of a frustration because here it is, I feel like we have an opportunity to do something great. And you're constantly taking away my weaponry, my arsenal, and supplementing it with just draftees that we have to develop. Well, I need some pieces, at least if you're going to draft guys, give me someone that's already established, that when Jordy walks out, I have somebody walking right in and jumping right in, filling those shoes. But you're not doing that. Now I have to tutor some young guy, which is what they've done in Green Bay over the years.
That's even more reason to jump on him and get,
I'm not saying you got to get out of him. I'm definitely not saying he shouldn't. I'm saying this is just an evolvement of who he is. He's done it before, behind closed doors, in meeting rooms. Guys, we got to play better. It's been done. But for him to jump out, I think it's a bit of frustration because you let Jordy go. This was my guy. He was hurt. He came back. He played well. I was hurt, so his play went down. Let us right this ship. We could have done something, but I didn't get the opportunity.
Welcome back to Greg Jennings and the biggest guy in the prison yard, Ty Law, as well as Jason McIntyre, who flexes and lifts weights like he's in the prison yard. Let's return to the National Football League, where we've seen the usual rash of training camp fights so far, but none more absurd than today's almost fight between Washington's DJ Swearinger and, wait for it, former Redskin Terrell Pryor, who flinched when a fake punch was in his direction in a joint practice between the Redskins and the Jets. Men, we know that there are things that you just can't live down, right? Like, to this day, I had my shorts on backwards playing on national TV at Kansas, and, you know, there were, you know, 14,000 people in attendance at Fog Allen Fieldhouse, and to this day, there's 50,000 people who assume they were there, and they make fun of the shorts on backwards chant. But shorts on backwards is not as much a shot at your manhood. Ty, is there any recovering from this for Terrell Pryor?
No, absolutely not, because that is what DBs do. That's great.
I was waiting for this.
Hey, you will never lay that down, because the eye in the sky don't lie, and that's not going anywhere. We're going to put that up in the cloud. Terrell Pryor, you know, he's from Beaver County, back home in PA, but hey, that is not a good look right there, bro. That is not a good look. So that is going to stay with him forever. And until he goes out there and moss somebody at least 10 times this season, because he can't just do it once. He got to do at least 10 mosses to redeem himself,
so
because that's
is
bad.
It, the flinch or the fact that he didn't do anything? Because I kind of wanted to fell to
first of all,
Pryor.
You got on the helmet.
He okay.
And so you cannot flinch in football when you got on the helmet when somebody uses their hand. You can't flinch. Okay, I mean, so you got to man up. This is the NFL, Greg, and you know it.
So, Ty, all weekend, these two teams got in fights at practice.
Right.
The coaches came out and said, no more fights. We don't want any. Don't get in any altercations. The Redskins had Pryor last year. Clearly, there was some beef with the wide receiver in the secondary. These guys don't like him. They were their quote saying they were going after him. What is Pryor supposed to do there? Just simply not flinch? If that's you can't take a swing at a guy with a helmet
on. We're going to do it in slow motion. Because come at me.
Just flinch.
Just flinch. Good. Punch you right in the face right now.
Let me.
That's what's gonna happen. As soon as you come out, you react.
He'd be kicked off the team, Ty.
I'm just playing with you, man. But no, you can't flinch with a helmet on.
Why would the Jets want him? He just threw a punch in a preseason practice.
Because it's a fight. Somebody just.
Terrell Pryor's been on four teams in 5 years, Doug. So, he's barely
sticking
in the league.
The point is, you have on a helmet. If he throws a punch,
I agree.
You're going to break your own hand with the face mask. That's stupid on your part if you're going to really hit somebody. So for Terrell Pryor to flinch, it doesn't make sense because you have on equipment.
This is a bad look for wide receivers. Please help
Let me explain something to you. It is not a bad look for Terrell Pryor. The fact that he flinched because somebody is appearing to throw a punch, I'm going to move. Boxers move. It doesn't look like a flinch because they ducking out of the way. So for him to do that, he turned his head.
I totally get that.
It's not embarrassing. It happens all the time.
And
are you kidding
people,
me right
Greg,
now?
Remind people DJ Swearinger's history. This guy's a cheap shot artist. He's not.
I'm not going to attack DJ Swearinger because that's the style of ball he plays. I'm not going to say he's a dirty player. He's a physical player. But obviously, if you could hear what they were saying, they're saying, I'm not going to let a quarterback beat us. This is not going to happen. You're a quarterback. They're looking at Terrell Pryor as a quarterback. What he has to do now is understand that every defensive back that he faces is going to take this approach. Jordy Nelson, when he first got to Green Bay, got jammed behind the line of scrimmage from Al Harris in one of our first practices. Do you know when he came back to our receiving unit? You get back out there and don't ever let that happen again. Tremont Williams, the very next play, lines up across from him, and he's in his mind as a DB, I think, you know what? I'm going to do that to you too. So they try to set a precedent because of what you've allowed to happen. That's what he's going to have to overcome. So now he's going to have to, like you said, go out there and moss these boys and play physical and let them know I'm not a quarterback that's moved to wide receiver.
I'm a
receiver.
Can we go to a video, Greg, of the greatest all-time not flinch? Kobe Bryant, you guys remember this, 2010, against Matt Barnes. Lakers were playing the Magic. And this is one of the best videos I've ever seen. Look at this.
No helmet.
Ty,
take a
look. No helmet. Kobe, fearless, did not even flinch whatsoever. That's impressive to me. Terrell Pryor did not pull a Kobe. He should have, but...
Listen, there are things that you cannot live down, right, in a locker room. In a locker room, when you roll up with a hoopty, with a terrible car, your boys are going to let you hear it, right? If there's somebody that you're dating that other dudes don't respect, or maybe other dudes in the locker room have dated previous to you, they will let you hear about it. But when there's a viral video of you flinching with a helmet on to a dude who's faking throwing a punch that has no helmet on, that one's going to be a tough one to live down.
So if he actually had thrown the punch...
You made the boxing analogy. A boxer going to flinch and come back. Boxers don't flinch and turn their back.
Right, that's a boxer. He's not a boxer. What I'm saying is, if he had thrown that punch, would we be saying this is embarrassing?
Yeah.
No.
We'd be saying that's dumb.
How is Terrell Pryor supposed to know he's not actually going to throw the punch?
Because he threw a punch with a helmet on.
Right.
We'd be going after him.
If Swearinger would have faked or thrown a punch at a guy with a helmet on, that would have been the dumbest thing ever. As opposed to Terrell Pryor, like, you're going to punch at me when I got a helmet on? Go ahead.
Or if he would have had his helmet and act like he was going to throw the helmet, that's totally different.
Welcome back. Ty Law, Jason McIntyre are back, and we're joined by NFL Network's own Bucky Brooks. Let's get to Pittsburgh, shall we? Where Ben Roethlisberger went down in practice today with a non-contact injury, but appears to be okay. Now, the injury comes, or potential injury scare, comes a day after new offensive coordinator Randy Fitchner insisted Big Ben hasn't lost a step and is actually having, wait for it, the best training camp ever. All right, so guys, listen, Big Ben has talked retirement in the past. Here's a guy that hasn't played a full season since 2014, and I'm not buying that he's having his best training camp ever. I do think that they're doing a better job of managing Big Ben's ego and the fact that he doesn't love to work a ton at this point in his career. Remember, he practices full one day, half another day, then a day off. They've given him the full vet schedule, but he's the quarterback, and I think some of this is Fitchner having his back because he knows Big Ben wants a new contract. And Big Ben took care of Fitchner, who was his quarterback coach. And, you know, they happened to push Todd Haley out, move Fitchner up. They're taking care of each other, and he's saying nice things about him. It doesn't mean that Big Ben's not going to have a good season. His QBR is down about, 10 points from his peak, from peak Ben Roethlisberger. He's still a really good quarterback, surrounded by two incredible players. But the idea that he's having his best training camp ever when he's only going full once every 3 days, I'm sorry, I'm just not buying it. I feel like this is a statement that every team makes.
Right.
It's just like every coach makes in the preseason. Man, do we have a great offseason. We lifted weights well.
Wow, it does.
We had the greatest training camp ever.
There's a big difference here. According to Ben Roethlisberger, he cut carbs in the offseason. He came in and, under his normal weight. He's been talking about working with a trainer. Ben Roethlisberger has now seen Drew Brees have a really late career surge. What is he, 39 years old? Tom Brady just won a MVP at the age of 40. He's going to be 41, put up big numbers. Why can't Roethlisberger, who's 36 years old, play for another 3, 4, 5 years? He comes into camp in shape. He's got great receivers. I'm actually buying this. I think Ben Roethlisberger's refocused now. Remember last year you talked retirement. I don't know. They won 13 games, I believe. They should have gone to the AFC Championship, that bad loss to Jacksonville. This is a Super Bowl contender. I'm buying Ben having his best camp.
You know what? I agree with you that everyone says the same thing. You know, he's having his best camp ever. If you're only practicing one day a week, you can't get hurt. You know, we'll never know until the season starts. You know, I've been a player for a long time. Even at the end of my career, I'm telling myself, that's the best training camp ever. knowing I'm lying to myself. But I'm going to tell you guys that because, you know, I got to put on this image and this perception of about what it is. I still think Ben Roethlisberger is a very good quarterback. Do I put him in the elite category right now? Yes, but the only reason I do that is because what he's surrounded with. He has Le'Veon Bell. He has one of the best, if not the best, receiver in the game. Antonio Brown. Yeah. Then you got Juju. You know what I mean? So he's surrounded with a lot of weapons. So you take a very good quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger is, and that's what makes him elite, in my opinion. But if you took that away from him, he'll still be a good quarterback, but he wouldn't be on the elite level that we're talking about.
And look, they're the catch rule away, really. Last year's catch rule away from beating the Patriots, getting home field throughout. And maybe the whole thing is completely different. Maybe they go to a Super Bowl. But look, you've played. And, you know, you've been on staffs before. How much of this is messaging and how much of this is reality?
It's messaging. It's as happy as camp because Todd Haley's no longer in the building. He had Todd Haley for 6 years, and there was a lot of friction. Todd Haley coaches hard. You guys talked in the previous segment about people not liking to get called out in film. Todd Haley took Ben Roethlisberger game to the next level because he challenged him. He made him get away from some of that sandlot style and play disciplined ball where the ball had to come out. He grew tired of that. He now has his buddy in as the offensive coordinator, so he's happy. We won't know how this relationship and how Ben Roethlisberger is until the bullets start flying for real in the regular season. Is that offensive coordinator the real deal like Todd Haley has shown that he can be? Then, when it falls back on Ben, if they're not having success, will he then take up for the offensive coordinator? All of those things come into play. And look, he talked about Ben. He's a high drama quarterback. Yeah. You just never know what you're going to get.
He is extra when it comes to it.
Matt Ryan is not. There are plenty of guys that show up, do their job, and go home. Phillip Rivers is not a high drama quarterback. And again, you know, I think Russell Wilson is a little bit more drama, but you mentioned Drew Brees. Drew Brees is not a high drama quarterback. I think the friendship thing is going to be interesting. Usually in these scenarios, when you come off of a super disciplined guy, look at the Cowboys, when they came off of Parcells. You get that 1 year where you still have discipline, and then the next year it starts to get away from them. When Gruden left the Raiders, the first year they went to the Super Bowl, lost to Gruden in the Super Bowl, but after that, the lack of discipline ended up kind of eating up the Raiders from within. I think that's what happens where the discipline of Todd Haley was good for him. Now the buddy makes him feel better, but the discipline will still carry over for another
season. Very similar to what Derek Carr experienced last year. Got rid of Bill Musgrave, who was really on him, grinded on him, had his buddy in Todd Downing, didn't play to the same level. Sometimes you need someone that is going to hold you really, really accountable in film room to get best results.
I hold Jason accountable every day in film.
That's why you're better.
That's why you get better. To Denver, where the Broncos just busted former future franchise quarterback, that's a sentence, Paxton Lynch, all the way back to third string after he was outplayed by last year's seventh round pick, Chad Swag Kelly, in the team's preseason opener. But Lynch isn't the only pick by John Elway that hasn't worked out. Of the 48 players Elway has drafted since 2013, only 10 are currently starters in Denver, and none of them have made a Pro Bowl. So I guess the question, guys, is John Elway a bad general manager? And look, the truth is you're judged by your decisions at the quarterback position. And the first mistake he made was he goes and he drafts Brock Osweiler, who's best friends with his son. And that was a huge mistake, okay? The best friend's my son at Arizona State, so I'm going to take him and make him my franchise quarterback. And then he doubles down by offering Brock Osweiler. Remember, people, when Brock Osweiler left and went to Houston, he left for $1 million more because he was mad because Peyton got his job back for the playoffs. But John Elway had still offered him like $15 million a year. It wasn't that he didn't like Brock. He just wasn't willing to go to war for him. Then he wanted to trade for Colin Kaepernick, but wanted to lowball Colin Kaepernick. Kaepernick's now out of the league, but because he wanted to lowball him, he went for a year with Trevor Siemian as his quarterback. And he drafted Paxton Lynch somewhere in that mix as well, who hasn't panned out. I actually think he's a pretty good general manager. I think it's really hard sometimes for superstar players to be evaluators of even their own position. Take Michael Jordan, who wasn't a good evaluator when he was in Washington, hasn't been a good evaluator in Charlotte. Doesn't take away from how good a player he is or the type of presence he has, but sometimes it's hard to get down to the nuts and bolts of what makes a great player even at your own position.
Well, I think it took a lot of courage for him to draft somebody in the first round and sit him third on the depth chart and put mm-hmm. somebody as a later draft pick that probably wouldn't make the team at any other time. So, I mean, you got to give him credit for that. I think he has not done an outstanding job, but he hasn't done a poor job either, because he did get a Super Bowl out of the deal. He did bring in Peyton Manning. He convinced Peyton Manning to trade in his Indianapolis uniform to come to Denver and win a championship, and he did that. So how many GMs in that span of time have gotten a Super Bowl ring? So we have to give him credit, so we can't just say he's a bad GM. They didn't draft well. He only has 10 starters. Yes, no Pro Bowls, but at the end of the day, it's about winning championships. And John Elway brought another championship that he didn't play in back to Denver.
Okay, but how long can he, you know, keep saying, well, I got Peyton Manning, we won a title X amount of years ago. Like, how many more years can he do that if Case Keenum flops? Okay, he picked up Case Keenum in free agency. What if Case Keenum's terrible and Paxton Lynch, you know, is a disaster? Like, at what point do you say, man, Elway's personnel decisions, Doug, you made a great point. Like, listen, he can see the field as a quarterback. He's drafted some good defenders, okay? Quarterback has not been his spot, despite being, what, a top 10 quarterback all time? Yes. For some reason, he can't seem to identify one. It's a little mystifying.
It's really hard.
He's a little overrated.
I would say this. Look, it's really hard. And to Ty's point, okay, Bucky, you know this. It wasn't just they won a Super Bowl. When they won a Super Bowl, Peyton Manning was on his last leg. He was awful that year. They won it because of the rest of the team. All the guys that he had put in place.
Well, not all of them. I mean, you know, he inherited some of them. He was in the front office above the GM. But
I think his best quality is he has some lower intestinal fortitude, right? He didn't get caught up in the Tebow thing. Right. Tebow won him a playoff game, and he was cool with bidding adieu to Tebow to get Peyton Manning in. And when he brought Peyton Manning in, who didn't play for a year, he threw 50 touchdown passes.
A Hall of Famer. Come on, like Peyton Manning. Like,
yes. But how many general managers will get rid of a young quarterback in his, second year in the league and get rid of him after he wins a playoff game against the Pittsburgh Steelers? Very, very few. He has some lower intestinal fortitude.
He definitely does. I think what you have to judge, I'm looking at 48 players drafted, 10 starters, no Pro Bowlers. The thing that you look at, teams are really comprised of first-round players. When I look at the starters, most of the starters are first-round players. Garrett Bowles, Bradley Roby, Bradley Chubb is going to be a starter. He missed on Paxton Lynch, and he hasn't done well evaluating the quarterback position. But it's hard. Finding a quarterback is the hardest thing to do. And when you're a star quarterback, a guy that played at a Hall of Fame level, it is hard to really look at the game the way that average guys will look at the game. And that's why some of your best coaches, some of your best general managers are guys that didn't have decorated careers, because they understand all of the process, A, B, C. When you're a star player, you can skip steps sometimes. And I think for Elway, look, he acknowledged the fact that, look, I missed on Paxton Lynch, but I'm going to keep taking cuts. I give him credit for moving on from Tebow, moving on from Paxton Lynch, continue to try and find a way to get a good quarterback in. He is not afraid to be wrong.
And look, Paxton Lynch was well-regarded. There's a story out of Dallas, okay, that had the Broncos not drafted him, when instead of drafting Dak Prescott, they wanted Paxton Lynch.
There have been two people that were wrong.
And remember that even Dallas, like, Dak only happened because Tony Romo was hurt. Right? And then his backup was hurt too. So he got an opportunity, and he played with the best offensive line, and he had Ezekiel Elliott. That doesn't even happen. Hell, when Seattle got Russell Wilson, they actually signed Matt Flynn. Because Matt Flynn had one great game with the Green Bay Packers, and they signed him, and then they draft Russell Wilson, who everybody says, man, we were going to draft Russell Wilson. Oh, yeah? You had two chances to do so. You didn't do it. Aaron Rodgers was, remember NFL draft day? He was the last one sitting in the green room twiddling his thumbs. Yep. He was ticked. I think 23 teams had a chance. So I hear you. I understand that the numbers would stack against you, and I think Vance Joseph's in a really tough spot because they probably should have moved on from him last year, but you can't argue with the fact that they have had, up until last year, sustained success, even with those whiffs that he's had at quarterback.
I mean, I give them credit. They were a defensive team. I think we want to make Denver an offensive-led team because that's what we're used to when we talk about the Denver Broncos and the John Elway era. Mm-hmm. We want him to find a quarterback that resembles himself when he played. That's not that easy. It's probably not going to happen. They won the Super Bowl by being a defensive team, so I think we have to give him some credit because he helped put those pieces in place for them to have that great defense. So, I mean, I can't sit up here and bash him for doing a bad job.
I don't know that I trust him doing the rebuild because, Bucky, you know it's coming sooner than later. This team seems like it's close to a rebuild.
They are close to a rebuild. Their defense can't continue to sustain it. They're not the same as what they were when they won the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
The amazing part is Case Keenum's their quarterback, who's the polar opposite of John Elway, right? 6 years in college, 5'11", right? No arm at all, just kind of makes plays on guts. Like, he's the opposite.
I was harsh on him, Doug. Gee.
No, look, he's fine. He's fine. He's good enough to get to an NFC Championship game last year, but he was the lesser desirable free agent quarterback who was out. Welcome back. Ty Law, three-time Super Bowl champ. Bucky Brooks, former player, executive in the NFL, and Jason McIntyre, IG champion, all back with me as we move to Oakland, where John Gruden's return to the Raiders is off to a bit of a rocky start. His defensive star, Khalil Mack, still holding out of training camp, and reportedly the two sides aren't any closer to a deal. And Vegas, the future home of the Raiders, is actually taking bets as to where Khalil Mack will be traded. Guys, I think that Gruden is blowing this. Now, I think he's a really good football coach. I really do. I think that sometimes we misremember how dynamic he was in Oakland and the job he did in Tampa. Granted, he was left with a very good roster and he won a Super Bowl, but with the exception of when he had quarterback injury issues, which really takes down any football team, they were solid at worst and really a playoff team almost consistently when he was there. He wore out his welcome. He's a good football coach, but their spending in the offseason, $55 million, leaves them nothing in terms of cap room for Khalil Mack, and they took so many chances in the draft. Guys like Arden Key and Azeem Victor, those are guys that had red flags in terms of off the field. Remember, he took Maurice Hurst, the kid from Michigan, who had the heart issue. Like, you're taking all these players with red flags. You're trading a third-round pick for Martavis Bryant, who is a spectacular talent, but he's one slip up away from being out of the league for a year. So I think running fast and loose with the cap, running fast and loose with acquisitions, running fast and loose with who you're drafting, keeping Marshawn Lynch, who can be a polarizing figure in that locker room and sometimes polarizing in the negative sense, I think this thing, you still have Derek Carr, you feel good about that. You still have some talent at wide receiver. And if you get Khalil Mack back, who you have under club control for a couple of years, he can't go anywhere. All those things could be good, but I do feel like they've mismanaged this thing since he's gotten.
Yeah, but Doug, this is a team that has a lot of needs, okay? This is not a very good squad, and the first thing you do when you come in, you clean out the, I don't want to say trash, but you clean out the roster to suit your system, right? So that's the first step. Now, I would agree some of the draft picks were very shaky because this team, you want stable guys. He didn't exactly do that. But I think this is just year one. I think botched is very strong. I mean, we're saying that John Gruden has made total disasters everywhere. I don't think so. I mean, I think they're going to be an okay team this year, but this is a multi-year rebuild.
No, I think he's actually done a fine job. When you think about the veterans that he brought in, he has said he wanted to make sure that he had a veteran leader in each position room. He wanted those guys to come in with a chip on their shoulder, but also to play on small, modest deals. So he was able to accomplish that. When you look at the gamble that he took with Martavis Bryant, third-round pick, look, in the scouting first and second round picks. Anything below that is lucky if those guys materialize. So Martavis Bryant has played at a high level when he's been right and available. They're trying to become more dynamic on offense. He's trying to piece together the defense. But this team is going to be driven by the offense. They believe they have a franchise quarterback. They have beast mode in the backfield. John Gruden is a really good coach. I was there his first season in Oakland. He is trying to bring it back to the level that he had it back then. They can be physical. They can run the ball.
But don't you think that they didn't understand the value that Khalil Mack was had, so they don't have any cash left over? The cash is a problem for the Raiders that a lot of people outside of the league don't really understand, but they don't have the cap room to fit it in.
They don't have the cap room, but they also, like, it's a spades game.
Right.
I got the big joke in my pocket. It doesn't matter what Khalil Mack says.
It's called
I
can a franchise tag.
So they got the franchise tag.
I thought it was the two of spades.
Oh, no, that's a big joke.
But you know what? He's doing the right thing because he's seeing all these lesser players out here getting these big contracts. And as we know, it's a very short shelf life in the NFL. You know, he sees his head coach get a $100 million deal.
Yep.
He's the face of the franchise. Even though you're an offensive guy, you want to make Carr the face of the franchise. But the reality is people know the Raiders
for Khalil Mack. That's the first name that comes to mind when you think about the Raiders right now. So you don't want to have that division within the locker room. He is your best player. And regardless of how great of an offensive coach you are, and I love John Gruden. I mean, it's one of those guys, from what I hear, people love to play for him. He's a player's type of coach. Offense, you're going to win some games, but you ain't going to win that championship till you get that defense right. And how he won his Super Bowl, it was a defensive team. So it's very important for Khalil Mack to get back. John Gruden needs to make that man happy, because he will not get a championship unless he has a defense.
See, now the thing is, maybe in those 10 years he was away, he looked at your old team, the New England Patriots, who don't pay anybody in the front seven, right. And he's like, well, how good do we really need to be on defense? Maybe we can be a situational defense. You can move the ball between the 20s, we hold you to field goals, and offensively we score enough points. It really depends on how much he believes in Derek Carr. Does he believe Derek Carr is one of those special guys? 2 years ago, people talked about Derek Carr maybe being a top five quarterback. Maybe John Gruden sees that in him, and he believes that his quarterback can elevate him to that level.
But that's where my question of keeping, you know, keeping Marshawn Lynch comes up. Plus, you know, Doug Martin, who...
You don't like Beast Mode?
I don't, in terms of the relationship with Derek Carr. Is it divisive in terms of the type of guy that Beast Mode thinks that Derek Carr is? Derek Carr is a milk and cookies in bed at 10 guy, and that's the opposite of Beast Mode.
Russell Wilson.
And I don't... And look, how does Russell Wilson get along with his teammates? Does that work long term? Welcome back. Jason McIntyre's back for Last Call. Let's move to the Lakers, who shifted the entire landscape of the NBA by adding LeBron James this offseason. But according to Lonzo Ball's dad, LeVar, LA is actually Lonzo's team. McIntyre, do you think it's LeBron or LeVar's team or Lonzo's team? Can they coexist?
It's LeBron's team, obviously. And yes, they can, because there's so much crazy on the roster now, Doug. Lance Stephenson, Rajon Rondo, JaVale McGee, all crazier than LeVar. I think the LeVar Ball experience is kind of over right now.
I do, too. These comments were actually made on an LA pop station on Thursday. It's Tuesday, and we got in the show. Yeah. But you go back 6 months ago, it leads. Now it's like he said something that's so crazy.
The boy who cried wolf, right? I mean, he said so much insane garbage that it's to the point where he can't say anything now. To really ruffle feathers at all. Nobody cares.
I think there's also a fear of irrelevance here. He understands he's becoming irrelevant. He's going to say even more crazy things and become...
How come you're not wearing your Triple B shirt or sneakers today?
I didn't
lost in the mail.
That's it for us. We'll be back tomorrow. Well, off tomorrow. See you Thursday.